I have the great honor to interview two more Jerrys. We're going to do this kind of simultaneously. So I make sure Jerry F, are you with us? Oh, there you are.
Yes, I'm here, and I just unmuted myself.
And Jerry B, it looks like you're unmuted. Okay, I will, I'll do this little bit of housekeeping here. This tape is produced for the Mid-Southern California Area Archives, and as such will not be reproduced for other uses. This tape will remain in the custody of the Mid-Southern California Area Archives. In the interest of anonymity, we ask that no last names be stated. And Jerry F, do I have your permission to do this interview?
Yes, you do.
And Jerry B, do I have your permission to do this interview?
Yes, you do.
Okay. Jerry B, I'm going to start with you. You were introduced to alcoholism pretty early in your life. You want to talk about that?
Yes, I grew up in Brooklyn, and my father was an alcoholic. And I wasn't a real bright kid, but I could figure out that drinking like that wasn't a good thing. And so I made up my mind and I told God that I did not want to be an alcoholic and I was not going to be an alcoholic. And I didn't drink with the gang, but on my 18th birthday, the family was going to move to Seattle. And so I had a combination birthday going away party. And they gave me a drink, and it was pretty wonderful. Not only was I part of the gang, but I had now, in my head, become the leader. And we ran out of booze, and so I gave them back the money they had given me as a going-away gift to go out and get some more of that. And that was my first drunk. And it was a problem. And 10 months later, I was living in a wooden box on the Embarcadero in San Francisco. And I like drinking. I like what it does for me. And I like living on the streets. I would think I'm a Skid Row drunk.
But now your dad was in AA, correct?
Yes. He when we moved to Seattle, he joined AA. And now I had a real resentment. His drinking ruined my childhood. And now it was apparent that his AA was going to ruin my drinking. So I could not like that man.
Jerry F., I'm going to switch over to you. Your beginning career in drinking also coincided with your career. History serves me correct. We do have stories of alcoholic newspaper reporters, and you were one of them. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, first of all, I want to thank everyone for putting this on. It's a lot of work, and I appreciate it, and I really enjoyed the earlier speakers. Judy's a pal. The other people were new to me, but actually, I was a student before I was a reporter. I started drinking at 18 when I went to college, and I used to run with this group of older people. They bought the liquor. I was the kid, and weekend drunks. And it was absolutely wonderful. Two or three drinks. I got the golden glow, as I like to call it. But I was no longer anxious, depressed, scared. I felt wonderful. You were wonderful. The world was wonderful. Everything was great until I came down. And then, but then I would get back up again. And that was the pattern. The drinking was perfect. Although the drinking really was because I was an alcoholic. I really raised that later. for whatever reason I drank, I wanted another one and another one and another one. I was never a social drinker. Necessity and or running out of liquor would stop my drinking, but I would get back to it when I could. And then I went into newspapering after I got out of college. Actually, I spent, I'm sorry, I'm having trouble with congestion. My summer before my junior year, I had a job with the West LA Independent, the summer replacement. And that was the first professional job I had. And then I, after graduated from UCLA in 1962, I took a year off from college, which is another story. And I went to work for the Beverly Hills Citizen News. And those were the days of the hard drinking, freeloading press. This is the 60s. That was my drinking time, the 60s. Very different than now. And the police and the press cooperated. I had police press identification. It wasn't like a real job. It wasn't like somebody boss looking at you or a time clock. You had to get your work done. And these were weekly newspapers, so it was not a daily grind. And I just had to get my work done and keep the editors happy. And I could drink or be hungover or be okay, it depends. And I had companions who were doing the same thing I was. It was an alcoholic paradise, newspapering in those days. And this kind of when you see the old 30s and 40s movies about newspapers, that was what it was like. And the police press identification kept me from ever getting arrested for drunk driving. I drove drunk a lot. I learned that if you watch the white line and keep up with the flow of traffic, you're okay. And I got stopped two or three times, maybe, and it was just go home. You know, you had to do something horrible, like a murder, to get arrested if you were a reporter. Needless to say, it's not like that now. It's very different now. So is drunk driving. In those days, drunk driving was no big deal. You paid a fine and went about your business. Drunks were comic figures in television and radio and television and movies in those days. And MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, they're responsible for what DUIs are now, and they're horrible. You know, my dear grandson still haunts him. He got one several years ago. It still affects his life. It's really bad. Anyway, thank you for that question. That's my spiel for the moment.
Okay. I'm going to go back to Jerry B. And about this time, Jerry, you arrived in Hollywood and you got an interesting story about finding AA meetings in Hollywood.
There's a little in between that. From Skid Row, I joined the Army and really got into my drinking and got an honorable discharge. And attended some AA meetings with my father because I had to keep him sober. He was going to support me the rest of my life. And it didn't work out for me. And I went back on the road and rode some freight trains and finally wound up in Ogden, Utah, where I joined the Air Force. And did 3 years and got a medical mental discharge from that. And then I went to San Francisco and tried to stay sober there. And eventually it dawned on me that I'm always drunk and I'm always going to be drunk. And so I decided I would go back to AA, but I had to go to Hollywood first to become a movie star, but that's a whole nother story. And in the process of going to meetings in Hollywood, I met a lot of gay people, and I was just coming out. And I was having a very difficult time with that concept. And so six of us got together and started a gay meeting. And then we went to central office and asked them if they would put us in the book with a G. And they said no, that they didn't do specialized meetings. But Men's Stag and Women's Stag didn't seem to be specialized meetings. So we started something called Alcoholics Together. And in the space of a few years, it grew. It really grew. Well over 200 people. And I don't recall the timeline, but the central office came back and said, yes, you can be in the book. Yes, you can have your G, but you have to change the way you do your finances. And that was amenable to us. And so that was the first gay meeting in Los Angeles, Alcoholics Together. And now the meeting hall, the Alano Club, is called the AT Center. So that was the rough part. I want to mention one other thing, that I had two tours of military, one in the Army and one in the Air Force, and both were from Skid Row drunks that I was on. And I'm afraid to drink today because I'll be a Navy SEAL next week. I don't think I want to do that.
No, probably not. Jerry F., let's come back to you.
Yes.
And now, you were introduced to AA through a colleague, but you were also going through your personal sort of awareness. Anyway, go ahead and tell that part of your story.
What I was doing was living a lie and drinking a lot about living the lie. I realized when I got sober how much living the lie about my life kept me drinking. And that is, you know, by no surprise, probably a gay man who didn't want to be one. And this, my coming of age was the 1950s, and you got no support for being gay. You got beaten up, teased, arrested, and sometimes killed. It's not like today with celebrities, politicians, millionaire businessmen being gay. And it was a whole different world today. But I just hated what I was, and I thought I was cursed, and prayed to God to make me straight. And I went out with women to try to become straight. And when I had a nice relationship, I thought, it's working, you're getting straight. But I always looked at the guys when we went out. And after 2 years of sobriety, I was able to come out finally. That was Christmas Eve, 1972. A foggy beach in Redondo Beach, I met this guy, and we had a lovely time. And I call it my coming out because it's the first time I was with a man. I had been with men before, but very furtively and very negatively. Well, I really wanted to be there. I had no more qualms. I had no more guilt, no more remorse, no more anything. That's what I wanted. And to be me, to be honestly me who I was. And I consider that the beginning of my present life, to have an honest life. And I credit AA. You know, the first gift was sobriety, which was October 14th, 1970. Where I went to my first meeting and became an alcoholic, as my friend Diane says. I was a chapter 3 guy when I walked in, and an hour and a half, I was an alcoholic because I thought I knew all about alcoholics. I'd seen all the Susan Hayward movies, which had AA meetings. She was the greatest female drunk in screen history. And I wonder whether she got, you know, any accolade for that. But anyway, but I didn't know the most important thing about alcoholism. The first drink gets you drunk. You know, it was so obvious that I didn't get it. And I got it that night, and I said, In those days, it was called the 24-hour plan, AA, just for now. And I translate that as just for now. I see life as a series of nows, you know, the unfolding. And I said, I want to stay sober today. And I hope to stay sober tomorrow. And I just grabbed onto that idea of being sober, and my life started getting better right away, you know? And I was a newcomer pink cloud, and I'm glad I was, because I knew how wonderful it was not to be getting drunk every night, whether I wanted to or not. And the end of my drinking, you know, the really bad part was home alone, going to have a couple that wound up on the floor, demoralizing. And then I was getting in trouble. I've been a protected drinker most of my drinking life. And for a lot of years, I didn't think it was a problem. I think the scrapes I got into were what I paid for the golden glow, because I always pursued the golden glow and that wonderful feeling. But I was just completely, completely demoralized, the worst part of my drinking. And by sharing with another human being, whom I did not intend to talk about my drinking when I went to see her, it was a business appointment. I just told her how horrible place I was. And she said, well, I go to AA, come to a meeting. And it was a Monday night. And I've been a sober alcoholic ever since that night. That's why that's what I choose for my sobriety date, that meeting.
And that date is? Forgot to
October 14th, 1970. I'm just about 50, a couple of weeks.
Yeah. And then Jerry B, let's go now. You came down to Long Beach after your time in Hollywood, and tell us about some of the meetings that you were going to and your home group and kind of the activities you were doing in Long Beach.
I got to Long Beach in 1993, and I immediately got into sponsoring people and participating in the move in the meetings as a greeter or coffee maker or whatever they needed a volunteer for. My belief is that the busier you keep yourself in the meetings, the greater chances you have of staying sober. And that has helped me throughout the years. I might go back a little bit. When I got out of the service and started AT, I only took the first part of the first step, that I am an alcoholic. And I stayed busy on that. And after 4 years, and I was still living off the streets. And, you know, I had this weird idea that I had it going, that I was really a hotshot. And if I could play the angles and stay sober, that's the rest of my life. But I got involved in a shooting, and the police took me downtown, and I was 4 years clean and sober. And I was able to look around and not see another AA person in the jail with me. And it dawned on me, the second part of the first step, my life is unmanageable. And I really understood what that meant. Drunk or sober, without a program, my life is unmanageable. And I took the steps. And after the fifth step, something happened to me. I had a complete change of attitude, and my life just turned around. It was just remarkable. I got a job. I facetiously talk about, if I knew that was going to happen, I might not have taken the steps. But then to find out that working helped me, not only financially, but emotionally. and I had to understand that my lifetime of thinking of how I should run my life was all wrong. And the right way was in the 12 steps. So when I came to Long Beach, I was an established sober person of AA, and I participated fully in all the programs and in the ODAT and then in KISR. And I've gone around around California as a speaker and as a someone to share their program of what it means to be an alcoholic, have a mental illness, and be gay, and be sober, and find a rich, fulfilling life. I am so grateful to the people of this program who showed me the love.
And just go back to Jerry F. You came to Long Beach. You were now in the South Bay, but going to meetings, but you were meeting all these people from Long Beach. And let's talk a little bit about that. Kind of interesting.
Well, a man named Ray White, who's just dead now, he was an AA friend. And I decided we should have a gay meeting in South Bay because there wasn't any. So we started this gay meeting and nobody from the South Bay came. All the Long Beach people came. So that's where I met all these Long Beach people. And I was living in Redondo. I got there through a fluke, which I won't go into. And that's when my program really started. I knew nobody in the South Bay. I got there because I found this Ocean View apartment for a very low rent. And it was a strange thing, which I won't talk about, but I plunged into the program. And I forgot to say earlier when I talked about coming out, what happened, if you stay in AA and it really changes your life, you become perfectly happy with who you are. I mean, that happened to me. I was perfectly happy the way God made me, and I never was before. And that's AA in action. It gave me that feeling. But I started going to gay meetings in the summer of 73. I went to AT in Long Beach. That's how I got to Long Beach. It was five meetings in Los Angeles at that time, and one was in Long Beach. And that was my first, where I met some Long Beach people. But then later, at this meeting, I really got to know Long Beach people. And then I moved to Cerritos from the South Bay, where I still live. And my meetings were generally Long Beach meetings from then on.
And Jerry B., I meant to ask your sobriety date, but why don't you go ahead and give us your sobriety date and just maybe tell us just kind of what you've seen over the years and how things have changed and all the different meetings that you've gone to.
Okay. January 28th, 1968. So I've celebrated 52 years of sobriety and a couple of months change. But my introduction to AA in San Jose with my father, he wanted me to get involved, and he was secretary of intergroup. And so I went to one of those intergroup meetings, and his idea was to put a telephone in central office, and the fight was on. The people who had written to the P.O. box and sweated out the 3 or 4 days before an answer came believed that these drunks today didn't deserve instant relief. They ought to know what it's like to want sobriety and stay sober. So that being my first encounter with the machinations of the AA, I understood that we're all crazy, that to fight over the fact of putting a telephone in 1963 in a central office, what would they do with Zoom today? So we've come a long way, baby. And yes, and some of those meetings in San Jose, I heard somebody bring up a divorce, and somebody in the back of the room said, "That's not alcoholism. You can't talk about that." And so there was a lot of AA police who knew what was socially acceptable to talk about and what was not. And it seemed if you hadn't had the experience, it was not. So, good for AA. And so that's what helped drive me to want to start a gay meeting, because I knew the problem that would have been faced with that. But today it is so different. It's wonderful. My admonition to anybody is go where the love is. Thank you.
Very good. Jerry F.
Yes.
Anything you'd like to add as your experience, strength, and hope to pass on to
folks? Just about changes over all the years I've been here. I was 31 when I got sober. I was young in AA in 1970. The drug culture brought in a lot of young people. And I was not a drug user. I wrote about it, but I didn't practice it. But that's when the young people started coming in, and I, as the years went by, I knew so many people getting sober at a younger age than I got sober, which is, I was very grateful to get sober at 31 and not wait till I was 50 or something. Probably wouldn't have lasted that long anyway. But, and the thing about 12-stepping that Judy talked about, that, those were the days when we did 12-step calls. They did a lot of them, and I did hospital work. And that changed when insurance began to cover alcoholism and drug addiction, People could make money sobering people up, and which is not to denigrate the quality of a lot of the programs, but it makes me think of, an editor of mine, when he would send me out in a story, say, check the fiscal motive. And that has pretty much put an end to 12-step work. I have not had a call to do a 12-step call in a long time, even though I'm on some lists. And but as far as the core program meetings, the things one talks about, the reasons one is there, the idea of you're there to stay sober, help others to achieve sobriety, you're there to work your program and stay sober, that is the same. That really is the same. Although what Jerry was saying, I have been to some meetings, not many, where people get upset about what certain people share, and I don't feel that way. I think people share in the meeting what is a threat to their sobriety or their happiness, and that's valid, And I'm just... I'm just so grateful I got sober, and I stayed sober, and I'm still sober, and I have a great sober life. I don't always know it. I get in my way. I have a big problem with anger over petty things. Not big stuff, petty stuff. And that's a problem, and I'm working on it. Every morning I start, because I'm pretty negative in the morning when I wake up, unfortunately. I start with a 3rd-step prayer, sitting on my bed. And then I ask God, am I sober? Yes. You have food? Yes. You have shelter? Yes. You have love? Yes. And then I ask my thinking and my actions for the day be positive, creative, non-selfish. And I ask the old Hippocratic oath, I guess it's called, in medicine. Help some, harm none. And I have wonderful friends in this program, and I have wonderful friends, and I have a musical life. I'm an avocational singer, and I'm a big opera lover. And my social circle is opera and Alcoholics Anonymous. But most importantly, I have a wonderful adopted grandson who lives with me. We've been together 4 years, and we just came to care for each other, adopted each other, and we take care of each other. And it's wonderful to have somebody living. I had not lived with anybody for many years. To have someone living in the house is great. He's indispensable with technology. Technology is the bane of my life. I don't like it. And dear Jose, I mean, he did stuff so fast that I can't even understand. Anyway, I'm happy, joyous, and free, sober alcoholic, if I will let myself be that, and if I get out of my own way, and, you know, but I sometimes seems to have a need to sabotage. I guess I needed the excitement of failure, I suppose, once in a while. Anyway, thank you for this session. Appreciate it.
Certainly. Gentlemen, thank you. Two Jerrys, thank you so much for your shares. I will now turn it back over to Anthony for our last speaker.
All right, wonderful. Again, my name is Anthony. I'm an alcoholic. And thank you, Jerry W. I want to thank Mitchell, Jerry, and Marika all for helping put together this event for us today. I'd love to thank Area 9 and District 4 for